I'm currently located on Nigana country, which is located in the northwest of Australia, kind of a remote town on the edge of the King Sound. And the King Sound's renowned for its extreme tidal range. It's about 12 meters from the low to the highest tide. So it's this incredibly raw place with marshlands and beautiful savanna with boab trees and termite mounds and incredible wildlife. And it's at the bottom of the southern end of the Gibb River Road, which is a very sort of famous four-wheel drive track that traverses country all the way up to Kununurra on the eastern side of the Kimberley. So we have a lot of tourists that come through in the dry season. And then in the wet season, we have these beautiful storms that sort of roll over and dictate what we can and can't do outside.
What do you say are the paradoxes of being a non-Indigenous person who considers both Aotearoa and Australia their home?
So the bouncing between two very different spaces is something that I explore through my work, that sense of isolation and always moving. But I also think that my work feeds off that a little bit too. There's a part of me that actually likes to be on the periphery a little bit. I live in a remote area. It is an extreme climate. It takes a lot of time and effort to get here, and it buys me a certain amount of protection, I think, and focus. We saw that during the pandemic. We largely were unaffected throughout the majority of the pandemic because we were so remote and protected in many ways. For me, it's inspiring being here.
At which point in your art making has your practice become a critical intervention and a deliberately political expression?
For a long time, my artwork's been deeply personal, but when I moved to the Kimberley, I came here to work for Mawaja Martin Culture Centre. I established Dolid Mindi, which is the media and collection space in the art centre. Mawaja was one of the unique art centres that actually has a program dedicated to cultural projects. And I guess if we sort of think about how an artist's mind works, my creative mind is always open. I'm always looking and gleaning for ideas to bring into my studio. But when I started working at the art centre, I felt it was really important to discern what was mine to glean and what was not mine to glean. And at the art centre, working with Wurora, Narinyan and Wanabal people, I was listening to them tell their stories. I was accompanying them to their cultural sites to record for their archive. And I felt it was really important to discern that these stories were not mine to glean from. So in a way, I drew a line in the sand, which helped me to understand when I would go home and I would sort of put my artist hat back on, that those were things that I shouldn't be touching, that those stories didn't belong to me. One of the first things I learned at the art centre was the importance of story protocols. So within the Aboriginal groups that I worked with, story ownership was very important. So particular people or families were responsible for certain stories or certain rock art sites. And the people that I was working with upheld that very carefully. They were very considered in directing me to talk to particular people about particular things. So, it was a very sort of considered process where I would find the right person or the right family to talk to. So I think what that did was it encouraged me to look at my own personal story and to sort of look deeper into question why I was here in this place and what my role was, and also what my family's role had been in the colonial history in New Zealand where I'm from.
What would you say is a common thread that runs through the various media that you employ in your practice?
Yeah, I guess I've never felt the need to restrict myself to one creative medium. Even when I was in art school, I moved throughout the different disciplines. And I was lucky to go to schools that facilitated that. They facilitated the fluidity of my practice. And yeah, I've never felt that I need to do just one thing. I think it would definitely be easier to have one focus and one thing that you just, you practice and get better and better at over time. But I don't really work that way. For me, it's more about allowing the story or the concept to determine the materials and the processes that I use. I think, looking back, my work was always focused on the home and my place within that space for some reason. I don't know why. I think originally I was really focused on the family home as a space for mapping relationships, people who had come and gone. And I became interested in forensics and looking at how every detail is important to mapping a story. And that led to some interesting photographic work that I did at Victoria College of the Arts. But moving to the Kimberley, it was the first time I think I really became interested in documenting the landscape, because the landscape is just such a force here. It dictates what you can and can't do. It's such a harsh living climate that you can't ignore it. And also it's so different to New Zealand and the animals and the colors and the textures. So for me, it became a place of, again, questioning, why am I here in this very remote place? What's driven me to be here? And that kind of interesting contrast between here and home in New Zealand. I've never been one to follow the pack. I've always gone off on my own adventures. And which means that you find yourself in kind of lonely and isolated places at times. But coming to the Kimberley, I became quite comfortable with that isolation and in fact, probably used it to my advantage in terms of being productive. So, yeah, I'm doing a lot of walking in the bush, actually, which is quite meditative and calming. I think I started to do that more after I left the art center. I just needed a way to calm myself and heal myself from the stress of curating the museum. And so moving from that world into being an art teacher and sort of taking these walks in the bush, I found to be quite kind of a healing process. Like the bush around the house where I live, you can go out there and walk around and not see a single soul. So it's got this airy quietness to it, which feels really, it's almost like being out at sea or something. It's really calming, but it's difficult to, you can take a photo of that space, but there's something really unsatisfying about just taking a photo of something that you're already looking at. I think for me, I need to interrupt the image that I'm working with in some way. Like there needs to be some sort of handmade quality to it.
And register an access of some kind beyond the mechanical image.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that's why I'm drawn also to cameraless photography. I've been working a little bit with cyanotypes recently and pinhole photography. Yeah, a way to sort of slow down and bring nature somehow into the work, into the production of the work. These are things that I'm still sort of experimenting with, but other artists do it much better than I do, but I like that idea of allowing mistakes and
Yes.
things to sort of happen and to organically, yeah, change the work.
And I'm kind of getting the sense that your intervention with drawing and incisions and mark making, intervening with a photographic or mechanical image also becomes a way of conjuring what cannot be captured by the camera.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I think with the work that I did for Mauldin Art and Culture Centre, there was a lot of time spent in the bush with traditional owners and a lot of time spent around the campfire sharing stories. And everywhere we would go, there would be protocols for for what we did in those places and where we went and when we recorded. And, certain things like there's one place where we had to have our hair up by the time the sun fell. There's places where you couldn't film at night, and lots of stories about the different sort of spirits or cultural elements within the bush itself. So I think for me, that was like an unveiling of looking into another dimension or a sense of there being something other than what we could physically see with our eyes and ways of going to country that protected us at those times, being welcomed, being with traditional owners, being smoked and going through those right protocols made me feel right about that space. And that's something that I continue to sort of do and ask to have to be in that space with those people because it makes me feel good because I then sort of know that I'm welcome. Yeah, so I guess walking around the bush here, like coming home from a bush trip and walking around the bush here, I was aware of that perhaps I wasn't alone, or perhaps there were other elements, or just looking at the way nature sees us a long time before we see it. So we're sort of these clunky human beings that sort of trudge through the bush and, you know, think we're alone, but really we're surrounded by wildlife and other things. So I guess for me, that's what's so frustrating about just using a digital camera and capturing the landscape. You're capturing this really clean image, but it's not capturing the depth of the space and the feeling within that space.
And could you tell us more about your experiments with your 3D sculptural drawings made with thread? Maybe you could share more about these intersections.
Yeah, so the drawing in space became a focus of mine in my final year of art school in Whanganui in New Zealand. I had been painting a lot and using the thread in my paintings. And then at some point, I just started working with the thread. I remember going to a life drawing class at art school and taking along my thread and wallpaper paste, and that's what I used to draw in the class. So I sort of moved away from traditional drawing media and started to think of thread as the line. And then years later, after I'd moved to the Kimberley, I got an opportunity to do a residency at Fremantle Art Centre in Perth. And I used that residency to experiment again with drawing with thread. And I used the Kimberley landscape as my inspiration and filled this room up with drawing experiments with thread and wool and suspending things in the air. And I just sort of kept the studio door open and allowed people to come past and watch and interact. There's kind of this beautiful, playful, experimental element to it where I'm not really fearful. Whereas I think when you're drawing something and you're framing it and you're exhibiting it, you know, you want it to be good, right? It becomes like a product or something that's potentially going to be collected. But with the 3D drawing, I'm not intimidated by it. I just sort of enjoy being able to work in that way. But I think now looking back, the marks that I would create in space with the thread and the wool, these sort of spontaneous wispy marks, I can now see those coming through in the drawings that I'm making in metal. Looking back, I was always very forensic, archival and accurate and tight, and I think it was through feeling frustrated and blocked that I needed to sort of find a way to tap into my subconscious and just free myself up a little bit and be more playful.
How would you describe your creative process?
You know, I have a way of capturing what I see, and usually that involves some kind of recording device like a camera or an audio recorder or a visual diary. What I do is I capture, you know, a wide range of things. I kind of organize them very loosely so that they're not in any kind of order. I can connect things that don't actually relate, yeah, and move them around. And that can happen over a short period of time, or it can happen over years. And generally, I use my studio walls. And so I'll make and experiment and record and then print and have these things all on the walls with magnets so I can sort of move them around. And so I might be experimenting with one technique and then I'll move that over to a photograph and then I can see, oh, okay, how I can apply that technique to that photograph because of the sort of the fluidity of my organizing process. Yeah, so I guess it's a little bit like having a mind map, like a visual mind map, and allowing things to sort of come forward and or move back or be cut up and dismantled and then rebuilt into a new thing.
When you set out, do you begin with some kind of inkling of what to, you know, tease out when you venture into a project? Or I guess what I want to ask is, you know, the role of the unknown when you, like, do you consider fumbling as a productive gesture when setting out and beginning work? And how would you describe, you know, the unknown in this entire creative process?
Yeah, I guess that's a good question. Sometimes I think there's an instinctive feeling to explore something, and that might be just going on a walk. And I guess I can relate that to my interest in the Kimberley landscape, just going out from here now out onto the marsh. There's so many interesting things to look at. I want to record and share my experiences here within the Kimberley, but for years I've been going out there and taking photos, and I'll come back to the studio and look at them and I'm completely disappointed every time. The camera for me is not the tool for this job. And so I have to kind of keep exploring. And that's what I did, was I continued to go out. I continued to sort of follow that intuition and go out. But what has actually led me to the process that is working is actually drawing. So I refound drawing through being blocked. I realized that I needed to develop my own visual language, my own drawing language.
Do you usually make studies before you set out with your drawing, or it's also kind of very freehand and spontaneous and you feel your way through the image?
Yeah, it's very spontaneous. I don't think much. I just look for lines or marks or shapes, and I just allow myself to sort of follow that. So the drawings that I will do in the bush are really just very quick studies. And then I'll take that back into the studio and develop something more substantial. I'll often work from photographs as well.
What prompted you to intersect drawing, installation, and photo-based media? Could you tell us more about your experiments with drawing, etching, and superscribing on photo media, and your 3D sculptural drawings made with thread, both of which call a keen attention to space and to the marks, texture, pigment, and other material features and traces in the landscape, and consistently draw cues from topography and place?
I worked at Mauldrum Art and Culture Centre for about 8-9 years. And then I went into a job teaching visual art to teenagers. Having to relearn fundamental drawing practices inspired me to look at mark making within the landscape. So I was teaching young people how to find marks within the natural world, but that translated really beautifully into what I was doing or wanting to do in the studio anyway. So I'd take the kids out into the school playground and talk to them about looking for patterns and trees and leaves and things. And then I would give them the scratch board and tell them to fill the page up with patterns. So I took some home to play with, and I just really loved the process of reductive drawing, where you scratch the line or the marks into it. And I think for me, that was a lot less intimidating than starting with a blank white page. I had to teach drawing, so I had to do a little bit of research to remind myself how to teach, you know, mark making and these sorts of things. And it was through that process that I discovered the ink drawings of Vincent van Gogh. He made these really beautiful ink drawings of the landscape in Europe, where he basically drew these landscapes completely made up of a range of different marks. You know, there was no shading, it's just line work. That encouraged me just to go out into the bush and actually, yeah, find patterns and marks. And that, in a way, became my library. It became sort of my database of marks that I could draw from for my larger works. So that was happening at the same time that I was experimenting with printmaking. And I was trying to teach myself etching into metal, but I was failing really badly. So I got really frustrated one day and I picked up my etching tool and I scratched into a wet plate that I had sitting beside me. A wet plate is like a piece of aluminium with a black coating on it, and you can use that in, you know, wet plate photography. But I just sort of picked this tool up and scratched it really aggressively because I was really frustrated and it was late at night. And what happened was, when I made the scratching action, it scratched away the black ink on top of this wet plate and exposed a beautiful copper line and then the aluminium line beneath that. And yeah, it was just a very beautiful mark that had been made through incision. And so I started to then take that into my photography process and scratch through the wet plates that I'd made. Then I decided, well, that I liked that process, but I was working really small and I wanted to enlarge it somehow. So that's when I started to buy large sheets of aluminium and coat them with paint and scratch through. And so that's sort of a drawing process that I'm doing at the moment.
You are listening to Conversations with the Assembly, a podcast series produced in conversation with the inaugural cohort of the Regional Assembly, comprising independent artists working in regional sites across the Asia Pacific. This program is an initiative of Regional Arts Australia with the support of the Australian Government's Regional Arts Fund. I'm Christian Tablazon, and I'm speaking with you today from Tarlac in the Philippines. Joining us for the seventh episode of the podcast is artist Katie Brecon.